You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
...that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a six-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County. Good afternoon. The weather today is mostly sunny with a high near 84, southwest winds 14 to 16 miles per hour. Tonight is going to be partly cloudy with a low around 54, southwest winds 5 to 7 miles per hour. Tuesday, there's a chance of showers with thunderstorms, also possible after 1 p.m. It'll be partly sunny with a high near 81, west winds 5 to 8 miles an hour. The chance of precipitation is 40%. And there may be a tenth of an inch of rain or higher amounts in thunderstorms in certain areas, whatever get the thunderstorms. Tuesday night, there's a chance of shower and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with a low around 57. Northwest winds around 5 miles an hour becoming calm. Chance of precipitation is 40%. And the new rainfall amounts at between a tenth and a quarter of an inch and higher during the thunderstorms. Wednesday, there's a chance of shower before 10 a.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 72. And northeast winds 5 to 7 miles per hour, and the chance of precipitation is 20%. Wednesday night is going to be mostly clear with a low around 50. Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and this is NAMI's Hour. Compliments at Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And there is a NAMI chapter in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we are all volunteers, work out of our houses. We have no paid staff. We don't have an office. We use our own phones, etc. And we try to help people and families, people who have a mental health issue, and families who have someone in their family, a loved one who has a mental health issue. And we do this in various ways. We do it through teaching classes. In fact, my wife and I are finishing up. We have three more weeks of a class. It's a 12-week class called Family to Family. We also run a support group, which is the third Thursday of every month, and it's held at 52 East Main Street in Flemington. We do presentations. We have a radio show, which you're listening to. Also, we have two houses, which we try to help people, you know, who have a mental health issue. In Hunterdon County, it's very tough to get housing, and so we have two people who are... We have two houses, a male house and a female house. And we just try to help people. We give presentations and so on and so forth, and we try to break the stigma that's attached to mental illness. Today, we are very fortunate to have who I consider a friend, Martha Roselli from Catholic Charities. Are you still responsible for behavioral health and youth services and what else, social concerns for Warren and Hunterdon County?
I'm also responsible for behavioral health in Somerset County now as well.
Oh, tacked a few more things on you.
Round it out.
Hang around another couple months.
Well,
they may throw some more stuff on you.
You know, it gets boring. No, yeah. Never. Never.
Yeah, right. You only wish it got boring.
True.
Would you explain what the behavioral health part of your responsibility is, and we'll go through each one
sure.
as we go down?
Sure. Well, we have many programs that would fall under the purview of behavioral health. The programs in Hunterdon County specifically would be first our program for the developmentally disabled who also have a mental illness. So we may have somebody who has a lower IQ and may be suffering from depression or schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. And so we have an outpatient program, a clinician who sees them and works with them on the challenges that they face each day.
Okay.
He also, the clinician, Ed Kucharski, also works with, if they're in a residence, a group home, or they're living with a family member, some of the challenges that they may face, the families may face, in working with someone who may be very, very seriously depressed or maybe their medication needs to be adjusted and may not be able to express that due to their developmental disability. So Ed works very closely with families, not just the person who has the mental illness and developmental disability, but very closely with the family, case managers, et cetera. Another program that we have is our outpatient program, Catholic Charities Counseling Services. And that's a program designed to support people when they're going through through life's changes. So kind of the average client we may see may be someone coming in who has lost a job or is going through a divorce or their children are misbehaving to the degree that it's affecting relationships within the family.
Okay.
It could also be somebody who is recovering from a from maybe a medical problem and is trying to get back into the swing of things. Could be a veteran returning from overseas or just but someone who is a local veteran. It could be anyone who is just trying to try and put the pieces together. I think all of us, if we look on our lives, can identify times where things just weren't going right for us. For me, it was when, you know, two loved ones died very, very close to one another. And I was, you know, it was a very disturbing time. I was a mental health professional, and I'm thinking, I'm going over the edge here. I'm so
right.
depressed. And so I needed help. And thankfully, our agency offers an employee assistance program. But the counseling did me a world of good. It was a very supportive place to kind of talk about those things. So we see a lot. We see a lot of folks who are experiencing those problems. And there's a component to that. Certainly, sometimes you need medication to just get you over the hump. And so we do have a psychiatrist and a psychiatric advanced practice nurse. And so they can see, evaluate, provide medication, do medication monitoring. Another aspect of our behavioral health area in Hunterdon County is our regional aftercare program. And regional aftercare program is designed to help adolescents coming into young adulthood from age of 17 on up to 22. And these are generally youth who have spent a lot of time out of the home.
Mm-hmm.
They might have been in foster care, now called resource homes, or they could have been in group homes, could have been in a psychiatric care setting, and now they're trying to learn to become self-sufficient. So they need someone who can understand what some of the behavioral aspects of their of what they're doing, some of the mental health aspects of why they're doing it, and help them put it all together so that they can plan a life and become self-sufficient. And in the RAP, we call it RAPS. In the RAPS program, our staff helps them to learn how to read a job listing on the computer, how to go on to certain job websites, how to understand what it means. You know, just because a job sounds good doesn't mean that it's appropriate for them. So looking what their interests are. And how to...
Would you just move your microphone back a little?
Oh, am I too close?
No! Well, that was good. It almost went to the ceiling.
Maybe I should just sit back a little.
There you go.
I'm afraid it's going to pop out now. Okay, I'm just going to hold it. How's that, Larry? Is that good?
That's fine.
That's good? Okay. So how to get an apartment they can afford. You know, they say sometimes they're so naive, they'll say, well, I want to live... you know, in Clinton or whatever, and we'll say to him, well, you know, I want to live on the French Riviera, but this is where I have to live. So, and so to help them with budgeting and things like that. So that's another one of our programs. We also have an intensive outpatient program for people who have a serious and persistent mental illness, and that's called our SPIRIT program.
And yeah, I want to talk about that just a little bit later. I want to get a little more into it. When you have... your children behavioral health. what do you find the child, and what's, first of all, what's the age bracket that you're dealing with in children's behavioral health? Is it up to 18, or is it, you know?
Well, children's behavioral health is like a, it's not a carve out, it's a separate entity in the state. And it's really required that almost any age, up to the age of 21 years and 364 days. So they're in the children's system of care. There's one exception, but they're in the children's system of care until they're almost 22 years old.
Okay.
And so that's answer to that question. Now, what's the rest of the question, Larry?
Well, what do they have? What issues are they facing to get them into this program? In other words, is it, you know, developmental issues? Is it mental health issues? A combination of both? Drugs, alcohol?
Well, there's many, many issues. And a lot of the issues are relative to their age and their developmental stage. So while we may see a five-year-old acting out, throwing things, trying to, you know, forcibly take things from other children, defiance in school or at home. So we see that in the younger children. Sort of as they get a little bit older and among their peer group, we'll see more things, again, defiance, but we'll also see things like bullying going on.
Mm-hmm.
We may see someone, a child who is seriously depressed at that age. It's sad to think that, you know, a 12-year-old could be seriously depressed and even suicidal, but that's just a fact of life for some unfortunate children and their families. And as they get older and they get out among their peer group even more, we'll see some things like a borderline on some negative kind of behaviors out in the community, such as tagging, what you and I used to call graffiti. And there's probably even a new word for it. I don't know yet. And certainly, you know, putting their toe in the water for substance abuse. Absolutely.
It's just, you know, we don't realize that in many cases that a child young can have these issues. You know, I know I gave a presentation to a group of nurses and doctors. And afterwards, two doctors came up, and they were from separate groups. And they both said they had three-year-olds who attempted suicide. Mm-hmm. And not that they, three-year-old, knew that it was suicide, but that they had pain and they wanted to stop it. And they would do something to stop it, you know, to try to stop it. And it's just like three-year-old, you know, thinking about, well, not, you know, in his mind it wasn't suicide because he didn't know what suicide was, but it was something to stop the pain in their head. And it's just, I mean, I was shocked. It was just, you know, amazing to me that a three-year-old, you know, you think of a three-year-old, you think, you know.
The big thing they should be worrying about is whether or not they're fully body trained. Never mind
exactly.
Suicide.
Right.
But it's a sad reality for some children and their families. And when we see them that young, generally what we're seeing is chemical imbalance more so than, you know, parents sometimes, I don't know how to say this because I certainly don't want to blame parents, and I'm certainly not blaming a parent of a child who's suicidal at three. To me, that's a whole different story. But, you know, you don't need to be your child's best friend. You need to set limits with your child. Mm-hmm. You need to say you can do this and that's it. You need to be able to pick your child up and hold your child and love your child when the child is being naughty and when they're being nice, but to let them know that their behavior is not acceptable at times.
Right. Right.
And I think that, you know, when we see the younger children, we've been out, our mobile response program, which goes out and works with families in crisis. Our mobile response program, we've seen children as young as 2 years of age. And when, you know, when I kind of ask them or I look at their notes and what was going on in this situation, oftentimes it's an overwhelmed parent who is trying to make ends meet, who may have depression of their own because of the situation that they're in. And, you know, they can't be responsive to the child in the way in which the child needs them to be responsive to.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that they're being neglectful. That's not the case.
No.
The case is you can't give what you just don't have.
Right, exactly.
And so that's what we see that on rare occasions, but even a rare occasion is too frequent.
That's true. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we'll be right back. Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is a Forward New Jersey Coalition member.
London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down.
In August 2007, the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis collapsed, killing 13 people and injuring 145, including little children trapped on a school bus. The bridge had been rated structurally deficient, but those warnings were ignored.
Build it up with iron and steel, iron and steel.
In New Jersey, there are 479 bridges carrying over 8 million vehicles a day, rated worse.
Iron and steel will bend and bow, bend and bow, bend.
These aren't just bridges waiting to be fixed, they're tragedies waiting to happen. On June 30th, the state's transportation fund will be empty. We need to replenish it now, because next time, it could be your family on that bridge. Go to ForwardNewJersey.com and find out how you can help. Paid for by Forward New Jersey.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we're very privileged today to have with us Martha Roselli from Catholic Charities. And we were talking during a break here, and I found out that Martha is now also responsible, in addition to the behavioral health, youth services, social concerns, now does a spirit program, which I'm going to get back to in just a second. I have a couple questions before that, though. Have you noticed an increase in children's mental health issues lately, over the last year or two?
Well, I've noticed an increase probably going back about 5 or 6, maybe even 7 years ago. I think one of the reasons that we're noticing the increase is because the services are more available.
Okay.
I think it's always been there, but families just had to deal with it on their own without the support that they needed.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing some, in the past several years, some more serious mental health issues, where before they could really be kind of behavioral, ADHD, that sort of thing. What I've seen more recently are children, very young children, being diagnosed with serious mental health concerns, bipolar disorder.
Uh-huh.
things that you normally wouldn't expect a right. child of 9 or 10 to be diagnosed with. So, right. yeah, there's been an increase, without a doubt. We talk about it quite frequently on the state level.
You know, it's ironic because ADHD is not considered a mental illness.
No. Mm-mm.
I don't think it is, but they consider it.
It's in the
DSM-5,
right.
And you know,
and it is certainly it's if you talk to people who have lived with people who right. have it, it's a behavioral health issue. Certainly, right. it's classified as a mental disorder.
Right. I mean, I don't think it's on the same level as schizophrenia or bipolar. It's a different type.
Yeah.
But they do on the DSM-5 now, it's listed as, you know, yeah, mental health issue.
It is, and it is a serious issue. It can really, you know, I was just, in fact, on Saturday speaking to my sister-in-law, whose grandson has had, you know, many, many, many issues in school. He's 10 or 11, I'm not quite sure how old he is. And I kept saying, you got to get him evaluated, you got to get him, have his mother get him evaluated, and they're, yeah. And finally they did, and now he's on Concerta, one of the medications for ADHD. And the teachers, everybody's saying he's done a 180. He's done a terrific
right.
turnaround. And,
right.
You know, sometimes you need some aid. You need
That's
some assistance.
True. That's true. And, you know, a lot of times families don't want to take that step because they're afraid of the stigma
right.
that's attached to it. And, oh, God, I've got a child that, you know, needs medication and, you know, is considered having a mental health issue. Well, what would you rather have, a child with a mental health issue or, you know, a child who goes off the deep end and does something that, you know, he or she will regret for the rest of their life, you know?
And not live a happy life.
Right.
I mean, don't we all want children to be happy?
Yeah.
And how can you be happy with some of these things that are occurring? You know, I recently had to work with a clinician who was seeing a child, a young child, who was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And when they addressed the schizophrenia, and they were trying all kinds of medication, because you have to be very careful. First of all, you know this, with schizophrenia, with medication, but then with a child, and developmentally with a child, you've got to be very, very cautious. But the child said for the first time he was able to sit in the classroom and not hear noises. He didn't hear voices, he heard noises.
Mm-hmm.
Hear noises in his head for the very first time that he could remember. And what a life-changing event for that child.
Sure.
And for the yeah. and for the people around him. You know, my sister-in-law, when she told me about, you know, her grandson being diagnosed with ADHD, said was whispering. We were in a gathering of other family members. It wasn't as
right.
though we were out, you know,
yeah.
in public. And I said, "Why are you whispering?" And she says, "Well, you know, why should it? You know, I don't want anyone to know this." And I said, "You know, when he broke his arm, you talked about it. It wasn't an issue."
Right.
I said, "This, your grandson's still your grandson. He's still that terrific kid we all love. It's okay that he has ADHD."
Right. Right.
And she just said, "Well, I'm going to have to think about that a little."
Yeah. Well,
okay.
You know, yeah, it's different people react in different ways, you know. When my son was initially hospitalized, he was hospitalized for almost 3 years. He went from carrier, 28 days, my insurance ran out, went to Trenton Psych for a little over 19 months when they transferred him to Hagedorn. When it was still open.
Mm-hmm. We're not even going there.
You know, and he was there for almost 11 months. And, you know, the first 6 years, my way of dealing with it was not dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not that I wouldn't have done anything to help my son. I'd have robbed banks. I'd have done anything. But my wife would want to talk about it, and I didn't want to. I'd go in the other room and read a book, or I'd go out and get coffee. You know, finally, she drugged me to a counselor and in IFSS, Intensive mm-hmm. Family Support. And I think she's retired by now. But I know she's not there because Chris Maglione is the mm-hmm. one who does it now. But her predecessor. And she, you know, talked to me and, you know, said, "You got to work through it. You know, you got to do something, you know." And so I worked something out kind of off the wall, you know, but you got to do what works for you.
Mm-hmm.
And what worked for me was I visualized in my head my son in a casket dying. He mm-hmm. died. And I have another son, and his
right.
son has mental illness. and he also is epileptic, which makes it 100 times harder to find medication and that's how it is. And now I've been dealing with it now for the last 12, 13 years, you know.
And I think, you know, especially for a parent, and all of my friends, all of my women friends are going to be scoffing at me now, but I think particularly for fathers, you know, they feel a real sense of being the protector and the supporter and the provider, and daddy can fix anything.
Fix things that broken.
Absolutely. You know, who does a child go to when, you know, their chain comes off their bicycle? They go to daddy. And I think in that role, I think that's got to be really hard for a father, because you cannot fix it.
No, you
can't. It's not fixable. It's not, you know, as if you can just,
right,
you know, get him back up and going straight on two wheels. That's, first of all, you can't do it. And you certainly couldn't do it alone. And it's certainly not your fault.
No. You know, yeah, it's not that I, you know, blamed myself or my wife or anybody. It's just that I couldn't deal with it. You know, people would ask, well, how's the kids? Oh, Paul's doing this. Scott's doing that. Sherry's doing that. I got four kids, you know.
Right.
And I would do that for years, you know, about the first 6 years of his illness. You know, he attempted suicide twice, and that the second time got him, you know, hospitalized for quite a while. But, you know, it's just the hard part was finding something, a psychotic medication that worked, that didn't, well, it didn't push him over the edge with the epilepsy, you know.
Right.
So consequently, there is one, but it's, you know, like every medication has a side effect. The one medication that worked for Mark, the side effect is seizures. Yeah. You know? So if you're epileptic.
Yeah.
But at that point, his psychosis was sky high and his epilepsy was, you know, down by the floor. So consequently, we said, well, you know, let's give it a shot. And, you know, he does very well on it. He's been doing very well on it. But, you know, it's just, and now I talk about it all the time. I don't care. It's, you know. But
he's part of your life. He's your child.
Right. Even though
he's
an adult child.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, the youngest of the adult child children, but he's still 38.
He's still yours,
you know?
But he's still yours.
You know, and it's, but it's, you know, you just, people react differently. You know, I always say in the classes that we teach, in the family classes, by the way, they're all free. Anything we do is free. There's no charge. But I always say that mothers are like mother bears.
Mm-hmm.
They hug the cubs close, and they want to hold them and hug them and, you know, keep them close. And the fathers, I can fix it. You know, the door's broke, I'll fix it. You know, the window, we'll replace it. And when something like this comes along and they can't replace it or they can't fix it, they react in various ways. Some of them not good. You know, I mean, I would go visit my son in the hospital. I would do all that, but I just couldn't talk about it to people, you know, even my wife, you know.
But now, I mean, I'm sure with your involvement, and certainly your very strong involvement with NAMI, for so many years, there weren't supports for people.
Right.
For so many years, you know, people were hidden away, and it was not a topic for discussion.
No, that's right.
And I think that, to me, you know, I will sometimes sit at a restaurant or whatever, and I'll notice something, because you're in tune to it. You know that.
Right.
You're in tune to things. And I'll notice something, and I'll just kind of, you know, don't want to eavesdrop, but frankly, I do sometimes. And to see how not only what's happening with the person who's experiencing problems, but their family.
Right.
You know, I just had a call today from somebody who was looking for services. And, you know, I said to the person on the phone, "How are you doing? You sound very upset." And she admitted that she was upset. And I said, "You know, I'm not going to tell you it's all going to be okay, because I can't. But I can tell you this. There are lots of people here to help you. And you'll get through this. You really will. Other people have, and you will too."
And the thing is, too, that I always tell people, if you're going to care for your loved one, you've got to care for yourself.
Absolutely.
You know, you have to be in good shape to care for your loved one. So, you know, you've got to take time out to do things that you enjoy doing, even if it's walking a dog around a block, you know.
That's right. That's
or
right.
Take 10 minutes and read a book, or sit out in the sun on the back deck, you know, whatever. Whatever you enjoy, do it for a period of time every day, because you've got to keep yourself healthy if you're going to help your loved one. And it's not something that always is easy to get across to people, you know, because...
Well, I think the first visual that comes to my mind is the visual that that everybody's heard, but it's certainly not a bad visual to reiterate, and that is when you're sitting on the airplane and they're going through the safety procedures, they say when if the oxygen mask drop, put it on yourself
first,
before you
right.
help your child or
right.
the person next to you who needs assistance, because you can't help somebody when you don't have to help.
Right.
And, you know, when I was treating a certain group of people in a different county, I would always put in their treatment plans. I would always have them identify two things, only two, but two things that made them feel relaxed or feel good or feel refreshed.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I would check in with them every week. Okay, so you said, for your example, walking the dog. How many times did you walk your dog this week? And then I would try to get them to key it into, okay, I'm walking the dog. The poor dog's legs are going to fall off. That's because I'm stressed to the point where I really need to do something else. Walking the dog is not enough for me right now. And so it worked really well as right. a tie-in. And I think if we all take that, no matter what we're doing, no matter what we're fighting in our life, if we try to build some joy into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a mother say to me once who had a very, very, very seriously psychotic child. This child had been hospitalized, if you remember Brisbane, Arthur
yeah,
Brisbane.
Right.
He had been hospitalized in Arthur Brisbane for a very long time. And she said that she could relax. She liked to do cryptograms and things like
right.
that. And she said she would put it down, and each time she put it down, she would close her eyes and she would see her son standing on their back porch with the sun streaming on him with a smile on his face. Now, that hadn't happened for a number of years, but she remembered that moment and she kept that moment. And
mm-hmm.
even though, you know, he was growing into a young man, she saw him as this little child. And she said that helped to sustain her. So visualizations, although yours was a very graphic one, but it worked. And
right.
that's what's important.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's true. It was a death of how you saw your son.
Right.
You know, what you thought your son would be. So it was a very very powerful one, but visualization can be very helpful too.
Yeah,
and you can do that anywhere, anytime.
Oh, yeah. You know, and the thing is, too, I think a hard part is, you know, people, I don't think that we did, and I may be wrong, but I don't remember, it's been too far back, but people, when they have a child, they visualize them as being doctors or lawyers or architects or, you know, whatever. And when illness of any kind strikes, whether it's, you know, disabilities or mental disabilities or, you know, mental health issues or, you know, physical disabilities or something, and they see those dreams that the parents have
right.
go out the window, you know, they may not be the same dreams that the child had,
right.
you know, but the parents had. And it's very hard to accept and it's very hard to adapt to that. Which is what I found over the years, you know. And you've got to try to tell the people, well, you know, this is where it is now, okay? And if your loved one with his college degree can't hold a job, then have him volunteer someplace.
Right.
You know, volunteering at the hospital helped my son immensely. It got him up in the morning. It got him out.
Gives him purpose.
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't a do-nothing job. I mean, he actually did, you know, something that was responsible, and he loved it, you know.
And, you know, another one of my programs, social concerns program in Warren County, is the food pantry. And sometimes we'll have people who have mental health issues volunteer there. And that's a real service to the community because,
sure.
honestly, if I didn't have volunteers, I couldn't operate the Catholic Charities. I sound like I own it. I don't.
Yeah.
Catholic Charities couldn't have the food pantry because
right.
it would be cost prohibitive.
Mm-hmm.
So he, in that case, your son or another young man like him, would be doing a service to the community. They're really feeding the community.
Right.
Well, you know, that's great.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Is there a, you used to have a children's interagency coordinating
yes,
council?
CIAC. We still have that. Mm-hmm.
CIAC. Well, all those lovely acronyms. Yeah, they drive me nuts, but because
well,
I can't figure because I can't figure them out half the times. But anyway, would you explain what that is?
Sure. The Children's Interagency Coordinating Council is convened by Catholic Charities under the auspices of the Department of Children and Families. It's the Children's System of Care, which is really behavioral health for children. And so we meet 10 times a year. And our goal is to try to improve access to services and the services themselves for children in the county. Now, there's a kayak in every county in the state. They may use a different name.
Right.
We use the original name, but there are other names. And so what we do is we meet. We have parents of children who have a some sort of behavioral health or mental health disorder. On the council, we have educators. We have providers. We have all sorts of people. There's, I think, probably we're up to around 30 members right now. And as I said, we meet monthly. We meet on the second Monday of each month at 1 o'clock at the Division of Child Protection and Permanency at the Old Egg Auction. People who would like to attend are welcome to attend. They have to sign a confidentiality agreement, but we don't talk about specific people.
Right.
We talk about issues.
Issues.
And the other part of what we do at the kayak is to provide educational opportunities on children's behavioral health to the community and to school systems. So in October, we had a very nice educational event over at the Center for Educational Achievement, and it worked out very well. We had teachers, parents, etc., and we had different providers come and speak about what services they offer. And we did it again. I didn't. I say we, but I wasn't there. We had staff and we had people from other providers like the Care Management Organization come and speak to school counselors. And that was on April 17th. So we provide these opportunities so that we can inform the public about what's available. But we also want to hear from the public, and this is absolutely important, what's not working.
Right.
What is it that's not working? Because that's just as much of our charge as it is to help people understand the system better.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have, you know, an issue or question or where do I get help or whatever, they just need to call Catholic Charities and ask to speak to the kayak coordinator, and she'll start working her magic.
That's very good. We mentioned the Spirit program before.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I would really like to get into that a little bit. Maybe you could explain what it is and how it started and so on and so forth.
Well, SPIRITS, that's an acronym. Another one of those that you like, Larry. Supportive Partners in Recovery in Treatment. I think that's what it stands for. And the SPIRIT program began several years ago. There was a request for proposals from the state, from the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, that we replied to, and we were granted the funding to start this program.
Right.
It's a program located at our Flemington Family Service Center right on Park Avenue, and it's designed to help adults who have a serious and persistent mental illness. The program is 6 months long. People can be extended if necessary, if it's clinically appropriate and they want to be extended in the program. And we have individual group counseling. We have different committees and councils. We have a consumer advisory board that helps us improve the program.
Mm-hmm.
We have nutrition counseling. We have a medication group. Medication education group. They do some fun activities. They have picnics and such like that. Transportation may be provided if the circumstances warrant it. We can have somebody go out and pick someone up. We also help with advocacy, help complete Social Security disability forms, things like that, if that's what's needed. There's also a psychiatric nurse designated to this particular program, and so she sees consumers twice a week. Or she's there twice a week to see consumers.
Mm-hmm.
She may see them once a week or whatever.
Right.
And so it's generally 3 days a week. Doesn't have to be. It can be more than that if the consumer needs more than that. It can be less than that as they titrate down, ready to go to an outpatient program.
Is that in Bridgewater? Or
yes,
is, that's
have
in
both.
Bridgewater,
it's
right?
in Bridgewater
and in Hunterdon County.
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Okay. I have known a handful of families. I would say, you know, five or six, who's one of their loved ones has gone through the Spirit program, and it just, you know, was outstanding for them.
Oh, that's
you know.
Good to hear.
No, really.
I was getting nervous there, Larry.
No. It was, you know, it was excellent, the results and everything. How does someone get into that? I mean, you know, was it the court orders it in, or how does that happen?
The court doesn't order it, but there are limited ways to get in. One way is to go through if you're being screened for a psychiatric emergency. And it doesn't have to be just in Hunterdon County. We've had people who live in Hunterdon County but were screened in Somerset County and who chose to come to this program. So you can come that way. If you were newly released from a psychiatric hospital, you can come in that way. There's someone available 24 hours a day to take the call.
Okay.
And then within that period of time, then they can call. Then they will set up an appointment within 24 business hours to get the person in to do an assessment to determine what level of service is best. Another way to get in is if you've been a Spirit client or you've been a consumer in another intensive outpatient program that's ended or is not working right for you, we can talk to you. We can do an assessment. It requires a little bit of a special approval, but we've done that in the past.
Okay. I know someone who their loved one just didn't want to go.
Right.
Hated it. Well, I won't go, blah, blah, blah. And somehow or other, they bribed the person some way or another.
Whatever it takes.
You know, and got them to go. Loved it, you know. And the results were outstanding. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's just every one that I've known that, and I've like about five or six, I guess about six families I know, had someone go through it and was awesome, you know, so.
Well, you know, we look at it as a collaborative process because we're not in charge of anybody's mental health. They're in charge of their mental health.
Right.
They have to tell us what they need. And then we'll figure it out. I always say to people say, well, how about this? And I go, you know what? You're putting all these roadblocks and barriers up. We're going to figure it out. It's, you know, we've got a lot of brains in this room. Let's just figure it out.
Exactly. And you did mention, I'm sure, and I must have not been paying attention, but I find that hard to believe. how long does it last?
It's a six-month program.
That's right. Okay.
But there are times when people do really well in the program, and they choose, and we agree, they've met their treatment goals, and they want to then go to a step-down group and maybe go to just a group, or maybe they just want individual counseling. That can happen, too, in other programs in our building, or if they choose to go to a private provider, that's certainly up to them. But it can also be extended because we've had, you know, these are people who have very serious mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not like, okay, you have the flu for 5 days, you're over it, and then, you know, you don't get it again for a year. It's not like that.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes problems resurface, and then they can come back into the program. It's not just one and done.
Mm-hmm. Right. I find it very rewarding that there's so many programs, you know, that are available to people. You know, it's, I won't go into a lot of detail, but there's, you know, I find that a lot of times someone gets released from a psychiatric unit, whether it's state or private, and they go to try to get an appointment with a psychiatrist, and it's anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks. Now, you just got released from a psychiatric hospital. You're going to wait 6 weeks to see a doctor? I doubt it, you know, because something's going to happen. You're either going to relapse and go back in or, you know, or something. And I just find that very frustrating, for lack of a better word, that we put someone in a hospital who needs to be. I'm not saying they don't need to be there. I mean, that they're there. And now they decide, well, they can be released, but it's going to take them anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks to get someone to talk to them and evaluate them and so on and so forth. And I just find that just, you know, blows my mind. And I understand that in Hunterdon County, we should have 36 psychiatrists. We have 14.
Yeah.
And
many of those psychiatrists will not take Medicaid or Medicare.
Right.
And that's a huge issue.
Right. And it's unfortunate, but I think that a lot of it has to do with the new health care.
Well,
thing.
I think this actually predated that, but I will say that some of the, because most of the people who we see in Spirit have Medicare.
Uh-huh.
Because they have had a long-term illness, and they're on, many of them are on Social Security. We do see in our outpatient, we are seeing problems with the new healthcare system in that people are paying their premiums. They have a very large deductible. and then they're supposed to be getting some money back from their payment of the premiums,
right.
And they're not getting it. There's uh-huh. a snafu somewhere. I'm not sure about it, but I sit in our meetings and I hear about this, and it's disturbing because people aren't getting right. what they need.
Right. And it's, you know, like I said, it's that's why when someone can get into a program like this, it's like Spirit. I forget what it stands for. You said it, but I couldn't remember it. So, you know.
But Spirit is what we right. refer to.
Right.
As,
it,
yeah.
Right. Exactly. And I find it very helpful, you know, to people. And I from what I say, my limited experience with it, it's been all successful, which is, to me, awesome. You know.
Well, I'm glad to hear it because we do work very hard. We do the WRAP plans there. That's Wellness and Recovery Action uh-huh. Plans. So the staff does do WRAP plans. And I think the SPEAR program is a wonderful acronym. But the important words in that are supportive partners, because this is a partnership.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we don't expect people to go it alone, and
right.
we don't take over. You know, it's a combination of putting all our heads together and finding something that really works for someone.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
That, you know, that may be somebody who has off-the-charts anxiety but enjoys growing plants. So taking the person to a nursery, finding some plants, finding out how do you take care of these plants and helping that person nurture those plants. You know, that may seem like almost foolish to some people, but it's not.
It's not, right.
You're taking responsibility. You're caring for something. You're seeing, you know, you're seeing the beauty in life, and you're seeing the fruits of your labor when this plant flourishes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you're learning things. You know,
right.
This one particular person I'm thinking of could talk about the hydration in the soil and this, you know, things that I don't even think. You know, I water
yeah.
them. What do I know?
Yeah, right.
Sometimes I overwater. Sometimes I forget. But, you know, really getting into this and as a result, reduced anxiety and increased socialization. What a good thing to reduce
sure.
someone's isolation. What a
right.
wonderful thing to happen. And using nature to do it.
And anything that works. I mean, I've had two ladies on. One was a musician and one was an artist. And they worked at one of the private hospitals. Well, I was saying it was Carrier Clinic, actually. But and the point was that they both said that when they have, like, music sessions and artists drawing and, you know, thing, it calms the patient down so. Mm-hmm. And they see results, like with the art and with the music, you know, if they're playing a musician or they're playing a musical instrument or they're listening to the music and just singing with it. It calms them so down, and it's just so beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever works, if gardening works, hey,
that's right.
You know,
whatever works,
you know, it's just, you know, it just amazes me that we don't use more of this. You know, some of it may be a little off the wall, but hey, if it works.
And you know, to me, it's you know, I kind of, it's almost a personal thing to me. Because a person is not their mental illness.
Right.
They're a person.
Right.
And that person can enjoy music, that person can enjoy art, and have a mental illness too.
Then they can enjoy digging in the garden.
Exactly.
You know,
so they're not all about always the mental illness. They're a person first. And when I hear people say, oh, well, you know, yeah, well, she's, you know, she's got problems, but boy, can she sing. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah, really.
You know? What does she have problems? What does she have? A lot of dents in her car she can't afford
yeah.
to fix? What does she has problems mean? And why is it just an aside? Why isn't she a beautiful singer who has problems?
Right.
You know, why can't she right. turn it around? So that's what we try to do. We try to help people to turn things around and to recognize the whole person and not just the mental illness. It's an important part. Can't ignore it. It's a
no, of course
part
not. But
of their
you know,
life, but it's not their whole life.
Right, exactly. You know, and I say to people sometimes, okay, it's not like use the flu. It's not like you go and you get an antibiotic and take it for 10 days and everything's fine and you know you're healthy again. This is not going to be that way.
Right.
But it's something that can be controlled. In many cases, not all cases, unfortunately, but in many cases. And you have a life. it may not be the one that you thought about having, or it may not be the one your parents or family thought you would have or wanted you to have, but it's your life, you know? And you have to do what's good for you and what works for you. There was an Asian girl who's in California who we've interviewed on the radio, by telephone, obviously, because I wasn't paying for her to come from California. But
it doesn't extend that far, huh?
No, it doesn't. They don't pay me, so
Yeah. Good point.
But the point is that, you know, we were talking, and she said she's severe depression and bipolar, and had, you know, a couple of years ago suicidal thoughts and almost carried them out and everything. And I said to her, well, what are you doing to control your illness? She says, well, I don't take meds. I said, okay, well, what do you do? She says, well, I'm into holistic, and I do a lot of exercising. So I says, well, does it work? She says, yeah, it's been working fine. I said, well, continue it. Mm-hmm. You know, don't stop.
That's right.
You know,
right. Whatever works for you.
She says, you're not going to tell me to take meds? No, I says, I'm not going to tell you. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to tell you anything. You know, I says, if it works, do it. I says, just understand that sometime maybe down the road, it may not work as well, and you may have to help it along with a medication, and then you have to be open to taking it. Mm-hmm. But right now, you don't. You don't have to. It's fine. Great. Continue your holistic and do your exercises, and everything is, you know, is good for you right now. I just understand that it may not always be that way.
Unfortunately, that's true. But even with medication.
Even with medication.
I mean, you know you have
right.
to change your
Absolutely.
Medications. But, you know, as long as you're open to, as long as people are open to what I call complementary therapies, because it is a person's decision whether or
sure.
not they take medication.
Absolutely.
For the most part. There are times when it's not their decision. But for the most part, it is their decision. And so let's see what complements the medication. Let's see what makes it better. You know, I was just reading a Reader's Digest last night, and you know, they were talking about home remedies and such things that you can do. And I thought to myself, you know, this is the new way, and it's a good way
right.
to look at what things can are instead of saying an antagonist, you know, a drug that will help another drug work better, such as Abilify or one
right.
of those. You know, let's also look at alternative therapies or alternative methods of coping that will help you along.
Right, exactly. And it's, you know, I feel that my opinion is maybe not the most medical, but whatever works.
Right.
Hey, if getting up in the morning and doing 20 push-ups works for you, do it.
You know? Not me.
Doesn't work for me, but it did it one time, but no longer. You know? But, you know, I'm just saying, you know, if that's what makes you happy, do it. Like I said, walking a dog. If that, you know, reading a book, going to the movies, whatever. Or watching a movie on television or, you know, Netflix or whatever. Is something you have to take care of yourself if you're going to help your loved one. And, you know, you can't be sick and they're sick. You know, that's not going to work.
And being a caretaker is an incredibly stressful position.
Absolutely.
To be in.
Absolutely.
You know, I've been a caretaker. I am a caretaker. And it's not about loving the person. It's not about honoring vows or any of that. It, you know, all that's very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
But every day, your thoughts are consumed with one thing or another.
Right.
And sometimes your time's not your own. And my husband laughs because he always knows when I'm feeling stressed because I pick up an Agatha Christie book. I think I've read every one of them 10 times. And in my library at home, it's filled with Agatha Christie books. Because that's what that and, believe it or not, walking my dogs are two things which I find
right.
the most comfort in. And I can tell when I'm stressed, and that's another thing we do in all of our programs is what is it that brings you around again? What is it that decompresses
right.
you?
Right.
And we're big on that in spirit because it's important. Certainly RAP plans take that into account, but it's important. You know, what is it that makes you feel
Absolutely.
Happy as a human being?
Right. And in the last 2 or 3 minutes we have, are there any ways that the community can assist residents that are living with a mental illness? What do you, you know?
Well, first, we always, the number one referral is certainly to NAMI. And, you know, what I have found, excuse me, what I have found with NAMI in the past is NAMI has welcomed people who want to help people. You know, so to staff a table or, you know, somebody to volunteer to help that NAMI. I think that's because NAMI has done incredible, I think, incredible work and has been responsible, I think largely responsible for the positive changes we've seen.
Had a lot to do with that too. I mean, come on.
Well, yes, but you know, we couldn't do it for many years. We had tried doing it alone, but it didn't work as well. When you have informed advocates for your loved ones, you know, because when you're seeing a person and you don't have the family there, a family member there, you may not be hearing the whole story, maybe the illness is interfering. Or maybe you're just embarrassed or whatever, but the family member can be instrumental and in providing support to that person too, as an advocate, as a historian, and certainly in providing support. Another way that you can help is try to do whatever you can to reduce stigma.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
To me, that's one of the biggest things.
Right.
You know, to try to, though I'm not the word police, and you know, political correctness I think has gone a little bit off the charts myself. Just being aware of what you say, how you say it, where you say it, why you say it. You know, I hear all the time, well, that person, you know, must be crazy because the person did a really bad deed. And I'll say, wait a second. First of all, I don't like the word crazy. But aside from that, why do you automatically assume it's a mental illness? Because there are evil people in this world.
My graduate degree is in
forensic psychology. I have dealt with evil people in this world.
Absolutely.
And mental illness has nothing to do with it.
Right.
So to be aware of that and do your best to destigmatize, you know, and if you need help to see, or your loved one needs help, seek out the help. Don't be embarrassed. It's really okay.
Yes, it is. And with that, we're going to have to close, but I really appreciate you, Martha, coming on, and we will have you back. You know
okay.
that.
Okay. Thank you, Larry.
And if there's anything that I can ever do for you, don't hesitate. You know, I send people to you.
Yes, thank you very much.
But, you know, like I said, I think that together we can get through this. Maybe not in our lifetime, but down the road I see it, you know, getting better.
I do too.
I truly want to thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you.
Because you and your organization is pretty awesome.
Thank you.
And we have to leave now, so you've been listening to Mental Health Matters, and we will be back next week, same time, same station. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter.
USA Headline News. I'm Kelly Sloan. The 2016 presidential race is expanding. Former neurosurgeon Ben Carson is running for the Republican nomination.
Politicians do what is politically expedient. I want to do what's right.
He held a press conference earlier from Detroit, and another GOP hopeful released a campaign video. Former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina says she wants to fix Washington.
It's time for us to empower our citizens, to give them a voice in our government, to come together to fix what has been broken about our politics and our government for too long.
Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee is expected to make an announcement later this week. The FBI is investigating the Phoenix apartment of two gunmen who attacked a security officer at a community center last night in the Dallas suburb of Garland. It occurred during an event featuring cartoon depictions of the Prophet Muhammad. At least one of the men may have links to terror groups. This is USA Headline News.
Are you putting your money into an IRA, pension, or 401k? Then I hope you're prepared to lose 30, 40, 50% or more of your retirement savings. Because it's not a question of if the market crashes again. It's a question of when. It's going to happen. Did you know there is a way you can protect and grow your wealth safely and predictably every single year? The people using this approach didn't lose a penny when the market crashed in 2000 or 2008, and they won't lose a penny in the next crash. In fact, their money will continue to grow safely year in and year out, even when stocks, real estate, and other investments tumble. A free report detailing this savings program is now available. This free report shows how you can get guaranteed growth, safety, and wealth-building power without risking your retirement in the Wall Street casino. This is the best way to have a 100% secure retirement. It far outperforms any IRA or 401k. To get this free report, visit bankonyourself.com. That's bankonyourself.com. Bankonyourself.com.
As the death toll continues to rise in the 7.8 earthquake in Nepal, there are new concerns from officials. USA's John Clemens reports.
That concern is the monsoon season now, that only increase the fears of diseases like cholera or other infections. Many of the survivors have been sleeping outdoors, either because their homes were destroyed or out of fear of another earthquake.